It's Thursday, November 24th, Thanksgiving Day here in Washington, and this is VOA's International Edition. I'm Michael Lippin. Coming up, we'll bring you the sounds of the holiday from New York City, as well as appeals for national unity from the U.S. President and President-to-be. We'll hear from our reporter in Mosul, where she's following the Iraqi army's offensive to retake the city from Islamic State militants. An Israeli journalist updates us on major fires sweeping through parts of the country. And we'll find out why the U.S. and China are teaming up to pressure North Korea. It's all ahead on International Edition. Americans are celebrating Thanksgiving today. The national holiday traditionally was a harvest celebration. Now it's an opportunity for Americans to gather with family and friends, feast on turkey, and watch New York City's annual Thanksgiving Day Parade, sponsored by the U.S. department store chain Macy's. Thousands of people lined the streets as inflatable balloons, costumed characters, and clowns floated, marched, and danced their way through New York's Manhattan Island. There was a heavy security presence, featuring bomb-sniffing dogs and portable radiation detectors as the parade proceeded without incident. In a national address, President Barack Obama encouraged Americans to come together after the bitterness of the recent election campaign.
As a country, we've just emerged from a noisy, passionate, and sometimes divisive campaign season. After all, elections are often where we emphasize what sets us apart. We face off in a contest of us versus them. We focus on the candidate we support instead of some of the ideals that we share. But a few short weeks later, Thanksgiving reminds us that no matter our differences, we're still one people, part of something bigger than ourselves.
The man who will succeed Obama, his former political nemesis Donald Trump, also made a plea for unity to the American people.
It's time to restore the bonds of trust between citizens. Because when America is unified, there is nothing beyond our reach. And I mean absolutely nothing. Let us give thanks for all that we have, and let us boldly face the exciting new frontiers that lie ahead.
Well, Trump was speaking in a video released late Wednesday as he spent the holiday with his family at their Mar-a-Lago resort in Florida. Well, it's time to check on what's trending on the web. For that, we go to our social media reporter, G. Abby Lee, with me in Studio 22. Happy Thanksgiving, G.
Same to you, Michael. Let's begin with the online reaction to the Macy's Thanksgiving parade that we just heard from. So I've never been to it myself, but I've watched it on
TV. Neither have I, by the way.
Yeah, you've been here for a long time, too.
I know.
And also know a couple of people who go to the event annually for that. But NBC's morning news program called the Today Show tweeted about it because the station broadcast the annual event. The characters that are in the parade also talked about it on Twitter, including, but not limited to, Elmo, Power Rangers, Pikachu, Mr. Peanut, and the legendary dance company, the Rockettes.
Those are all very cool characters. What else is trending today?
Michael, as soon as Halloween was over, stores started displaying Thanksgiving merchandise, and now that it's Thanksgiving, it's all about Christmas. President-elect Donald Trump is in the hot seat because his store is selling an ornament that costs $149.
Yeah, I'm not sure I could afford that. Why is it so pricey?
Well, you didn't buy it for another reason.
Well, that's right.
Yeah, it's apparently finished with 14-karat gold. And apart from that, it's a regular-size ornament in the shape of a Make America Great Again hat. One user tweeted, "And the market for this 149 ornament are the people who said they voted for Trump because times are hard and the elites don't get it." Another user tweeted, "I'm thankful I'm Jewish because no matter how much we might disagree, no one is going to buy a Make America Great Again Christmas ornament." But some Trump supporters ask those who are critical of the pricing to not judge their decision of purchasing the ornament. "It's my money. I'm going to use it however I like it." Outside of Twitter, it attracted a series of joking reviews on Amazon.com. Michael?
Yeah, I want to get some cool Hanukkah ornaments, actually. Thank you very much to our G. Abby Lee. If you want to find her on Twitter, her handle is at G. Abby Lee, and mine is at Michael_Lippin. This is International Edition. Here's Here are some of the top stories right now on VOAnews.com. American billionaire Wilbur Ross is expected to be named Trump's Commerce Secretary. Ukraine's president says Trump spoke to him about Russian aggression in a phone call. The UN's incoming Secretary General Antonio Guterres meets Russia's Putin. Turkish warplanes are on alert after a Syrian strike on Turkish troops. And report says 150 Nigerian Biafra separatists are killed in a government crackdown. Expanded coverage of these stories and more on voanews.com. This is International Edition. Iraqi officials say a suicide truck bombing claimed by Islamic State militants killed at least 70 people at a gas station south of Baghdad on Thursday. Many of the victims in Hila were Iranian pilgrims who had taken part in a Shiite holiday. The attack comes as Iraqi forces battle to retake the key city of Mosul from IS militants. VOA correspondent Heather Murdoch has been with those Iraqi troops and gave us this update to International Edition's Sarah Williams.
Well, here, coming from the Eastern Front, they are steadily moving forward. They say it's really slow going because Islamic State militants are throwing back mortars into the neighborhoods. So that is slowing things down. They also have tons of stories about the various ways civilians are being used as human shields. Some soldiers say they saw civilians handcuffed to Islamic State militants the other day as they dragged them out of one building to move back. But they have been consistently moving back and not forward.
Now, you were inside the city of Mosul earlier today. What was it like? What did you see there?
Well, there's still mortars coming down inside of the city in the areas controlled by the Iraqi army. So there's a lot of damage. Everything's ruined. There's holes in walls, buildings blown up cars everywhere. All of the electricity has been cut. The locals say that the water was cut off by Islamic State militants when the army came in simply to punish the people. So people are pretty desperate and desperate, but also calm because they also are relieved to have the army in charge at this point. Like as we were driving in, we drove in with a couple of different cars and an army vehicle. All along the roads, you see kids with victory signs waving at us. So they are pretty excited to be freed of Islamic State militants, but they're not sure what's going to happen next because of the lack of water and food aid and electricity.
Were you able to talk to any of the civilians about what conditions were like when Islamic State was in control?
Yes, they are very concerned about the time that they were with Islamic State militants was a terrible time for them. And they say that they were whipped for things like shaving their beards or smoking. And some civilians have told horrible stories from other places of people's fingers being cut off for smoking or heads being chopped off for owning a mobile phone. So there's all sorts of this violence. And then there's also an underlying feeling of oppression, they say, when they lived under Islamic State because there were so many rules. And the children couldn't go to school because the Islamic State militants took over the schools and forced the teachers to teach their own agenda, which was violence. So most of the kids didn't go to school, had nothing to do, and most of the parents were out of work. So extreme poverty was also a big problem under Islamic State rule.
And that was VOA correspondent Heather Murdoch speaking with my colleague Sarah Williams. In Israel, firefighters were battling blazes across the country on Thursday, including a massive fire in the mixed Jewish-Arab city of Haifa. Israeli officials blamed many of the fires on arsonists whom they accused of terrorism. Several suspects have been detained. Sarah Miller is a deputy editor at the Times of Israel news site. I spoke to her on the phone a short time ago while she was in Jerusalem, and I asked her how bad the situation is.
It's pretty bad. In Haifa, which is the capital of the north and Israel's third largest city, between 60 and 70,000 people have been evacuated from their homes. 13 different neighborhoods have been evacuated and buildings are on fire. There's no power in a big chunk of the city. And people spent a large part of today trying to get out of the city, and there was gridlocks and panic and smoke and firefighters. It's been a bit of a hectic day.
Well, what do we know about where these evacuees are going and whether any people have been hurt?
About 100 people have been treated mainly for smoke inhalation. Thank heavens nobody has been badly hurt and there have been no fatalities. It's mainly smoke inhalation. The people who have been evacuated are being hosted by families in the area and in other parts of the country. People have really opened their doors. In ways, it's very reminiscent of the 2006, in one aspect, it's reminiscent of the 2006 war with Hezbollah in Lebanon, where people, there was a mass evacuation from the north, and people really opened their doors and hosted people who had to leave their homes. It's oddly reminiscent of that. And the most interesting thing is that the Islamic movement, which is in a lot of ways not seen as being particularly pro-Israel, and a lot of members of the Arab community have really gone the extra mile and made it very clear that they're willing to host people regardless of ethnicity in a country where Jews and Arabs don't always see eye to eye. It's been quite, for want of a better word, heartwarming.
So the Islamic movement, for the benefit of our listeners, is a movement of Arab Israelis, a religious movement that promotes Islam in Israel, which has a big Arab minority. And I wanted to know, how are Arab Israeli leaders reacting to comments by Israeli officials that many of these fires are being set deliberately by arsonists, and they describe those arson attacks as acts of terror, with the obvious implication being that terrorist attacks are committed by Arabs or Palestinians. So what is the response to that?
There's been a lot of anger. There have been a lot of indignant responses, and the head of the main Arab faction in the parliament, a man called Ayman Oda, made a very impassioned speech earlier today. He was in Haifa, and he said that this kind of phenomenon impacts on the Arab communities just as it does on the Jewish communities. And when there's a fire, the damage it causes, it does not discriminate. And as I said, the Arab community has been very quick to open its doors to everybody who's been affected by the fire.
Well, thank you very much to Times of Israel editor Sara Miller for speaking to International Edition from Jerusalem.
Thank you.
A senior UN Security Council diplomat says the United States and China have agreed on tough new sanctions against North Korea for its missile and nuclear programs. The diplomat said Wednesday a new draft UN resolution could be ready for a vote as early as next week. Korea Society Senior Policy Director Stephen Norper told my colleague Victor Beatty that the move shows Washington and Beijing moving closer together to confront North Korea after its fifth nuclear blast on September 9th.
It's encouraging, and it shows a level of unity that hasn't existed before. It probably also reflects new political realities that China sees with an incoming U.S. administration, that it will do well to probably cooperate more closely. That's been a push by the current U.S. administration and certainly has seemed to be emphasized in early comments from the incoming transition team.
According to the diplomat in these reports, the key provision of the new sanctions is a cap on North Korea's coal exports to China, Pyongyang's main trading partner. How would this impact North Korea?
Well, coal is certainly the most significant area. It has been held out for largely humanitarian reasons by China. So if China is willing to compromise on the coal aspect, that represents a significant part of the trade in terms of North Korea's exports to China. So that is a significant revenue earner for North Korea. North Korea happens to have a unique ability to export anthracite coal, the clean-burning coal, at much lower prices than can be obtained by countries such as Australia or Vietnam. So that gives a comparative advantage to North Korea. But that will certainly be called to question if this indeed goes forward, and it appears that it will, and the North Koreans will respond, I would suspect, with a tremendous level of concern, because this has the potential to create a major economic hit.
How many more sanctions before these things really take hold?
Sanctions take a long time period, as we saw in the South Africa case, as we've seen elsewhere. And it's far too early to say that the sanctions that were levied under United Nations Security Council Resolution 2270 earlier this year have registered the impact that has been designed. It just takes more time. But what this does show is a widening net, and the fact that it is expanding by way of both individuals and affiliates, and the cost of doing business with North Korea is going up. And that includes for secondary actors like China, who are concerned that sanctions will have implications directly for them. And already we have seen a number of Chinese banks and businesses not wanting to do business with North Korea for fear of crossing the sanctions or for raising the ire of the United States Treasury.
And you're listening to analyst Stephen Norper speaking to International Edition's Victor Beatty. This is VOA.
This is Science in a Minute.
A star called KIC 846-2852 is still getting a lot of attention a year after scientists noticed the star's unusual light fluctuations. Theories about what caused the star's weird dimming patterns vary from it being surrounded by planetary material or by a flock of comets to the idea that there is a nearby megastructure built by an advanced race of aliens. A new study has found that along with its strange pattern of light fluctuations, the star's overall brightness has also faded slowly and steadily during the 4 years of Kepler observation. The study's two authors found that the star had dimmed by nearly 1% over the first 3 years of the 4 years, and then by 2% over the following 6 months of study. The star's brightness remained at that level for the final 6 months of the mission. I'm VOA's Rick Pantaleo.
This is VOA's International Edition with me, Michael Lippin. On Thanksgiving Day, Americans often get together with relatives to enjoy a festive meal and offer gratitude. This year, Thanksgiving follows a bitterly contentious presidential election season that often strained relations between family members who backed different candidates. VOA's Adam Phillips asked some fellow New Yorkers how Donald Trump's victory in the election will affect their Thanksgiving.
It's Tuesday, 2 days before Thanksgiving in Manhattan's Times Square. Like many tourists here, Mary Stokowski of Minneapolis, Minnesota, and her sister Peggy Brown of Tustin, California, are reflecting on the recent presidential election. Mary speaks first.
I like Mr. Trump. I think that he's going to do a good job. If we let him do some things that he would like to do, maybe not make some quick judgments, I think he might do a good job for everybody.
Are there people within your family who are more for the Clinton folks? And I'm wondering, if there's going to be a conversation. Are people going to be avoiding the subject?
No, I think that there will be some listening going on, but there will be some strong opinions that will be said. One of our nieces is a very staunch Mrs. Clinton fan, so she was crying, she was ranting and raving on Facebook, and so we might not want to get into it with her because she might run out the door. I don't know.
What do you say?
In my family in California, we just stay away from the subject on Thanksgiving. We want to have a really good time, and if you start getting into politics, it alienates people, so we stay away from it.
Silence about the election will also be on the menu for Dina Sayed Ahmed's family, but for different reasons.
My family is Muslim. We're all Arab. My parents are immigrants. My two older sisters are also immigrants. So I think you can kind of get the idea that we're all kind of opposed to Trump, given our background and given the way he's been speaking about people who come from our background.
Is there fear in your family?
Naturally, there would be fear because you can tell that I'm Muslim. You can tell that I'm not white. I mean, I don't know. We haven't really talked about it.
Are you going to talk about it, though?
No, I don't think so. I mean, that's been the coping mechanism so far, like just to ignore it until something really bad happens.
Israeli-American Renat Pinchas says the Jewish family that's invited her for turkey and all the trimmings takes an opposite approach. Her hosts were Hillary supporters, but their in-laws backed Trump.
And they have been at odds for months now, and they're all very, very temperamental. So I'm sure it'll be a very angst-ridden slash exciting slash hopefully coming together at some point Thanksgiving.
What did your friend yourself say about the upcoming meal?
She was hoping she could kind of bury the hatchet, settle everything, and hopefully have some peace. But I don't think anyone's opinions are going to be changed. I think everyone's just going to be really stubborn and stick to their own guns. So probably things will escalate to a point where it gets tense, and then we'll just bring out the dessert or something.
Levi Drake from Fort Myers, Florida, comes from an interracial family where the votes were divided.
The black side of my family voted Trump, where the white side voted mixed.
You think there's going to be any tension around the dinner table?
Absolutely not. Absolutely not. There's not a chance. They'll share their views, but obviously, you know, regardless if you like it or not, you have to hope the best for our president-elect and hope that he makes the right decisions. Also, it's like no one wants to be in bad spirits.
Cesar Romero is a Mexican-American whose entire family voted for Clinton. For them, Trump's victory will mean somber spirits.
We really weren't expecting a Trump victory. And it's just like a lot of soul-searching now. Like, I'm a U.S. citizen, fortunately, but not everyone is in that same boat, you know? With Thanksgiving, since my family's pretty left-wing, I think we're just going to be thinking of ways of how to help people and, like, figure out, like, why we had this vote.
Politics will be a big part of the conversation for Jeff and his family from Minnesota. They were just as passionate about supporting Trump as the Renaros were about supporting Clinton.
I think we're all very thankful for it. I don't know if it necessarily has anything to do with Thanksgiving, but it's just knowing that things are going to change.
Indeed, most Americans can agree that the transfer of power from President Barack Obama to President-elect Donald Trump will signal some dramatic changes, both in tone and policy. However, the expectation that the transfer will be peaceful, if not always smooth, is one big reason for gratitude for all Americans this Thanksgiving Day, 2016. Adam Phillips, VOA News, New York.
You've been listening to International Edition on the Voice of America. Your director today was Tracy Carter, and the engineer was Dan Crafton. And Dan actually surprised me today. He left me a plate of turkey and chicken and a glass of white wine in the studio. I don't normally do this, but the food is delicious. Cheers to you, Dan. Happy Thanksgiving. And to all those listening to our show today and celebrating the holiday, have a happy Thanksgiving. I'm Michael Lippin in Washington.
An editorial reflecting American ideals and institutions.
The fourth Thursday in November is a national day of Thanksgiving in the United States. The tradition is a very old one, dating back to the arrival of some of the earliest English settlers in North America in the 17th century, who, after their first successful harvests, paused to celebrate their bounty and give thanks for surviving their first terrible winter in what was then a wilderness. Falling in the autumn, Thanksgiving has much in common with harvest holidays in other nations and cultures, such as Vietnam's Trung Thu celebration and Ho Mowo, the annual yam festival in Ghana. Still, with its turkey dinners, family gatherings, football games, and parades, there's something about the day that is distinctively American. Together with the 4th of July, when the U.S. marks its independence from Great Britain, it's a truly national holiday that includes all citizens in a common purpose, regardless of religious, political, or ethnic persuasion. It also is a time for people to look back at the year, take stock, and think about the future. With our nation dealing with crises in Eastern Europe, the Middle East, and West Africa, the year's looming uncertainties likely will be on many minds today. President Abraham Lincoln proclaimed the first official Thanksgiving amid similar serious circumstances, the American Civil War. But like their colonial ancestors, Americans are essentially an optimistic people. Surrounded by friends and family, today as in the past, they will enter into the spirit of the day, giving thanks for life's blessings and the promise of the future living in a free land.
That was an editorial reflecting American ideals and institutions. For a transcript of this and other VOA editorials, or to receive editorials by email, visit the VOA Editorials Internet homepage. at www.voanews.com/editorials.